Oh, sorry about that.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Good morning.
Morning, Madam Chair.
Thank you for... Okay. Senator Johnson, I think we're going to start with you. Since Senator Hayden is on his way, but he's tied up in a meeting, so if you could start, we would certainly appreciate that. Senator, please proceed.
Okay, Madam Chair and members, I have this morning Senate file number 921, which is a piece of legislation that asks charter schools to, the authorizer of charter schools to provide a report on their schools. I have with me today Kathy Saltzman, who is the State Director for Students First, and Amanda Lodermeyer, who is...
was a founding teacher at Hiawatha.
She's coming, a founding teacher from the Hiawatha Leadership Academy, and are here to testify in support of the bill. Members, this is a bill really to, I think, provide more information and is not at all in opposition to charter schools, but as a something to look at that I think people are asking for, and we're happy that they mostly, I believe, will be supportive of this legislation. And with that, I'll turn it over to Ms. Oh, we have an amendment. I think it's in the package.
Thank you. Yes, we have the A2 amendment. Could you let us know,
and
Senator,
I would,
what this does?
It really, all it does is just kind of clarifies, changes language, simple... simple requirements, and so I think when we get into the bill, if we adopt it, then we'll talk about it as a total with the bill. So I'd like to move the A2 amendment, is it?
The
A1 amendment.
Yes.
A2 amendment?
Senator,
okay.
Yes. Any questions on the A2 amendment, members? If not, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted.
And, Madam Chair, Ms. Saltzman will take you through the bill now, and then we will have open for discussion.
Ms. Saltzman, good morning. Welcome to the committee. If you could please introduce yourself and proceed to explain
here,
the bill.
There. And thank you, Madam Chair, and also committee members. I'm Kathy Saltzman, the State Director for Students First, and I want to thank Senator Johnson for carrying this important bill, because we think that it really is about accountability and also strengthening all schools for all of our students. Just a little background to start out with. In 2009 in Minnesota, we did a major overhaul of our charter school law. We were the birthplace of charter schools, which we are very proud of, in 1991. But for about the next 15 to 16 years, while other states were looking at our law, implementing charter schools, they were also improving their laws so that there was accountability and that schools were strong. And in Minnesota, we sort of rested on our laurels. And by about 2008, if you can remember back, those of you who are on this committee, there were a lot of reports in the paper about charter schools, and it was time to do some major reform. So as a result of the work, particularly in the Senate, we had a subcommittee. I was the chief author of that bill, but I know that some of you, I believe, served on our subcommittee. We really did major reform. One of the things that we did is that prior to 2009, charter schools had sponsors. And sponsors were sort of like today's authorizers, except there wasn't the accountability piece that we have now. And so charter schools would have sponsors, and they were sort of on paper, but many of them were not doing their job. And so in 2009, when we overhauled the law, we really looked at national best practices. And so much of the language that is in Minnesota's charter school law now came from national organizations that said this is the best practice across the country. And so in developing this concept of authorizers, they are organizations that apply to the department. They could be a school district. They can be nonprofits. They can be a higher education institute. They can also be single-purpose sponsors who, you know, exist just to charter schools. They apply to the department through a very rigorous application process, and then they are given the authority to actually charter the schools through an application process. They then provide oversight and evaluation, and then they also have the responsibility of either renewing or terminating a contract with the school. So authorizers, we gave them, as the state, as a legislature, we gave them the authority to really provide the critical oversight of charter schools. So after 2009, with the passage of this bill, the Minnesota state law became the nation's strongest charter school law. I think a couple years ago we went to number two, but as of 2013, we are still the strongest charter school law in the country. But there is one area where we've been noted that we are not as strong, and that is in our authorizer accountability piece. And so this bill is a starting point to look at that. And while we're not going to bring up there's lots of problems now with authorizers, the one thing that I hope that the state learned in 2009 was, why should we wait until there is a problem to address accountability and oversight? So this is a start to that. So I hope that gives you sort of a little charter school authorizer 101, some background in that. What this law does, and I will speak to a little bit about the changes, is that what this bill does is that it will require authorizers to file an annual report with the state and the public that provides compiled information about the portfolio of schools that they authorize. So some authorizers might have 5 schools, some have 20, some have 10. So depending on how many schools are in their group of charter schools, they would compile existing reports that are already required in statute. So charter schools already file an annual report that includes their academic performance, their finances, their enrollment, and they would compile these reports. They would also include the status of all the schools in its portfolio, such as are they approved but are not opened yet, are they open and operating, have they closed schools, and if they have, the date and the reason. They also would include a copy of the financial statement that they file with the state. Now, the original bill called for a separate audited report. And what we really want to do here is look at the same financial statement that they already filed with the state. In the governor's policy bill, there's a recommendation that right now the authorizers report on their expenditures. The governor recommends that they report their income and their expenditures, and we would support that. The other piece that I think is really important here is that while we're looking at this as a way to compile information so the public and the commissioner and the state and legislators can say, what does this authorizer's portfolio of schools look like? The idea behind this is that authorizers have the accountability to hold schools accountable. And so the piece in here that is also, we think, is very important is to identify the lowest performing charter schools that they have in their group. And the way it's defined in the amendment is that it is the bottom 25% of the schools that are in the 25% of both the state's multiple measures rating and focus rating under our federal waiver. And the idea here was to look at those schools that are the lowest performing, and that the authorizer would have to include in their report how are they using the processes that they've outlined in their application to the department to provide oversight and evaluation to hold these schools accountable to the contract that they have with them. So authorizers do not manage schools or operate schools. They provide oversight. But basically, every year to say, if you have low-performing schools, how are you holding them accountable? So as opposed to talking about closing these schools, what are you doing every year to address that this school is not performing, with the thought that if they do not improve, then maybe you need to look at, you cannot renew the contract, but giving them a focus ahead of time. There has been some discussion, and some of the groups that we've talked to, that there is concern that we identify the 25% of these schools using the federal waiver, because that is not in statute. But that seemed to be a piece where you would look at multiple measures instead of just a 25% proficiency rate, for example. We are working right now with the charter school organizations. We are also working with the department to try to identify what does that lower 25, how do we put that like, you know, language in here. So while we're not quite there yet, we believe there's still time to amend this bill before it moves, like, you know, forward. We do want to note that we're aware of those concerns and want to work to make sure we're very specific with that. There would be, you know, perhaps exemptions for schools that have special needs students or really target students who are in a credit recovery program or a graduation incentive program. So what we're trying to do here is that when we have the largest achievement gap in the country, what are we doing to improve schools when they are not consistently performing? And charter schools are given the ability to have flexibility. We give them the ability to waive mandates so that they can do some things differently. In exchange for that, should we hold them to a higher degree of accountability? Absolutely. And so that's the piece here, is to say that when we offer choice to families, if we have consistently lower performing charter schools, then we're really diluting the pool of quality choices, and they are not, like, you know, serving students. So again, I just want to go back to talk about that, you know, national organizations have looked at this as a best practice in terms of this annual reporting. We think that what is in this bill is not, like, burdensome for schools to be able to say we're trying to use existing reports. And I think it's a very important report, given that, you know, we are using taxpayer dollars, and that this really helps to ensure that there is accountability for the responsibilities that they perform.
Mr. Chair, did this handout get distributed to members from Students First? And there is this handout really kind of reflects what Ms. Salzman's just told us about today, and I thought it would be good for you to have that.
Senator Johnson, we're getting that out. I also want to note that we do have a quorum for today's meeting. Are there any questions while that's coming out for Ms. Salzman?
Otherwise, I would ask that Ms. Lodemeyer come forward with your testimony.
Ms. Lodemeyer, go ahead and introduce yourself to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Amanda Lodemeyer. I am a Minneapolis resident. I have been working in education and an advocate for education equality for over 10 years now. I was a Teach for America Corps member and, as stated previously, a founding teacher at Hiawatha Academies, where I also served on the board for a year. I cannot emphasize enough the importance of oversight for charter schools. There are some charter schools doing some really, really amazing things in this state. And I truly believe that the authorizers to hold them accountable to publishing reports to the public is useful, not only to you here at the working at the legislative level, but also us parents and the public and us teachers looking to work for high-performing schools and organizations that are trying to connect families to high-performing schools. So thank you for listening today.
Thank you, Ms. Lodemeyer. Are there any questions for our testifiers?
And Mr.
Senator
Chair,
Johnson?
This bill, the companion bill, did pass in the House last night, so there will be an opportunity for us to work on the legislation as it moves forward, hopefully.
Any other questions, comments? If not, go ahead, Senator Johnson, and make a motion.
I would move Senate File 921 as amended be passed and considered to be put in, no, referred to the Finance Committee.
On that motion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
All opposed? Motion prevails. I think we're moving to, thank you. Senate File 1118, Senator Clausen. Go ahead, Senator Clausen, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, my name is Greg Clausen. I'm a member of the Minnesota Senate, representing the communities of Apple Valley, Rosemont, Coates, and Northeast Lakeville. And Mr. Chair and committee members, thank you for the opportunity to meet with you today regarding Senate File 1118. Senate File 1118 is a proposal amending Minnesota Statute 2012, Section 125A.02, Subdivision 1A. Regarding children ages 3 through 7 experiencing developmental delays. The proposal identifies homeless children living in conditions with a high probability of resulting in or developing a developmental delay eligible to receive special instruction and services at the discretion of the local school district. The proposal also includes agencies that serve homeless families to be represented on interagency early intervention committees. I'd like to give you a little bit of background on why this proposal is necessary. And there is a handout that at this time, if we could just have that distributed, appreciate it. A Wilder research study conducted in October 2012 identified 10,214 adults, youth, and children as homeless in Minnesota. 46% were 21 years and younger. National studies document that many homeless children experience developmental delays due to multiple risk factors in their lives. In one study, more than half, 54%, of homeless preschoolers had a major developmental delay and delays in more than one area. A developmental delay is a significant lag in a child's physical, cognitive, behavioral, emotional, or social development in comparison with norms. Developmental delays include problems with speech and language, motor and fine motor abilities, cognitive thinking, and personal and social development. With us today is Dr. Ann Mastin. She is a distinguished McKnight University professor in the Institute of Child Development at the University of Minnesota, and she has studied homeless families for more than 20 years. Many of her studies have been conducted in partnership with Minneapolis Public Schools. And I'd like to share with you some of the results of her study and research. When you look at physical health of homeless students are sick four times more than their peers. They have four times more respiratory infections, two times more ear infections, five times more gastrointestinal problems, and four times more likely to have asthma. They're hungry two times more than the rate of other children, and they have high obesity rates due to nutritional deficiencies. When you look at emotional and mental health, they're three times more likely to have emotional and behavioral problems. 83% have been exposed to one serious violent event by age 12. 25% have witnessed acts of violence within their family. Their language development is delayed, and they have problems processing new information. Dr. Mastin will be talking about academic outcomes, so I won't belabor that point. But also there is a lack of developing of executive functioning skills. These are skills that students learn at a very early age, where they learn how to manage their time and attention, the ability to switch focus on topics, planning and organizing, the inability to curb inappropriate speech or behavior, and the inability to integrate past experiences with present actions. Targeted services for identified developmentally delayed homeless preschoolers will provide a high return on investment, given their likelihood of poor school achievement and adult outcomes from early adverse childhood experiences. The handout that you have is taken from a workshop that Dr. Mastin of the Minneapolis Public Schools presented, and it provides information from 2008-2009. And many times we're very critical of some of the academic outcomes of the Minneapolis schools, but if you look at the 5,547 students that were identified as homeless out of approximately 33,000 students that they had enrolled in 2008-2009, it's very apparent that they have some real issues to overcome. If you look at that handout as well, you'll see preschoolers, over 1,600, representing 29.6% of that total homeless population for that year. At this time, I'd like to introduce Alexandra Fitzsimmons with the Minnesota Children's Defense Fund.
Ms. Fitzsimmons, welcome to the committee. Please introduce yourself. We look forward to your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Alexandra Fitzsimmons, and I'm the Legislative Affairs and Advocacy Director for Children's Defense Fund Minnesota. We're a statewide organization that advocates for policies that seek to improve the well-being of children. And I first want to say thank you to Senator Claussen, who has truly championed this issue and knows so much about homelessness and its impact on children. And I'll also share with you that I'm going to be brief because we truly do have a panel of experts today that can speak to this issue. So I will briefly frame the issue for the committee members. Research and practice experience have shown that homelessness is one of the most traumatic experiences a young child can face. In addition to the lack of a stable place to live, homeless children may also be living in deep poverty and may be part of a family fleeing domestic violence, socially isolated with few supports. Homeless infants and toddlers are much more likely than stably housed children to exhibit developmental delays. According to a recent national study, which Senator Claussen just cited, half or 54% of homeless preschoolers had a major developmental delay, language, gross motor, fine motor, social, and delays in more than one area, compared with only 16% of their stably housed peers. Many researchers report significant relationships among the experience of homelessness, higher incidence of childhood illness, and developmental delay. These problems are demonstrably greater for children who are homeless than for stably housed children living in poverty. The environments in which homeless infants and toddlers live, combined with the efforts of parents to keep their children safe, can create situations that may not foster healthy development. For example, keeping an infant or a toddler in a stroller allows highly mobile parents and families to travel and keep children safe from risks in their environment. But prolonged stroller time does not provide the child the opportunity to explore his or her environment or exercise developing muscles that are necessary to progress from rolling over to sitting to walking. And the isolation of a stroller does not foster interactions with adults that are necessary to develop both attachment and language. Part C early intervention services can help place homeless young children on a track to meet developmental milestones and be prepared for success when they enter school. Before I close, I just briefly want to talk about Part C early intervention services, also called Help Me Grow. Part C comes under the federal IDEA and was created in 1986 to do primarily three things. One, to enhance the development of infants and toddlers with disabilities. Two, to minimize potential developmental delay. And three, to reduce educational costs by reducing the need for special education services as children with disabilities reach school age. Part C early intervention services are provided by school districts. Services include speech and language therapy, nutrition, physical therapy, occupational therapy, and family counseling. Services are focused on helping babies and toddlers learn the skills children typically develop during the first 3 years of life, including crawling, walking, talking, eating, dressing. And a family coordinator helps families develop an individualized service plan and identify other potential services. So it's a holistic approach that's also a two-generational approach where you're working with mom or dad and you're working with a child. Currently in Minnesota, Part C provides early intervention services to infants and toddlers who are exhibiting a developmental delay or have a medical condition that is likely to lead to a developmental delay. So this bill would make children eligible for Part C services by the fact that they are homeless. High-quality early intervention services can change a child's developmental trajectory and improve outcomes for children, families, and communities. And we know that intervention is likely to be more effective and less costly when it's provided early. The last three points that I want to leave with you. One, there was a study that a MinLink study that was done in 2009 that followed children over time who had received early intervention services. That study found that one-third of children who had received those services did not need special education services by second or third grade. Number two, want to share that early intervention is voluntary, unless, just so you know, it involves an infant or a toddler who's in a substantiated case of maltreatment, which we're not discussing here. And then thirdly, which I already touched upon, the importance of this two-generational approach. So before closing, I just want to thank you for considering this bill and just share that ensuring the healthy development of infants and toddlers experiencing homelessness is an urgent task that must be considered within the early childhood school readiness continuum. So I ask that you support the bill and ensure that children are receiving the services that they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Fitzsimmons. And is this Ms. Mastin? Would you like to testify?
Yes.
Please introduce yourself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm very honored to testify today here on behalf of this very important bill. I'm a professor in child development.
Ms. Mastin, I'll just have you introduce yourself for the tape. Thank you.
Oh, okay.
Your full title.
I'm a professor, Irving B. Harris Professor in Child Development at the University of Minnesota.
And Dr. Ann Mastin, thank you.
Thank you. I'm honored to be here today to testify. I've conducted research since 1989 on the situation of homeless families in the Twin Cities area. And, of course, I was involved in that because there was a surge of homelessness in the 80s. Then homelessness leveled off, and now we're having another surge as a result of the economic crisis. Early on, as you've heard from Senator Claussen, research documented both here in Minnesota and across the country that there were high levels of academic health and behavioral problems in these young homeless children. And that's not surprising given the high level of risk in these families. These children often have multiple risk factors that we know are well established as associated with poor academic achievement as well as health and behavioral problems. And many of the children staying in shelters are very young. Usually the data in Minnesota show about half are under the age of 5. Early in life, during sensitive periods for brain development, these children often experience what scientists nowadays call toxic stress, so-called because of the harm this stress can cause to the developing child. Today I want to highlight findings from our most recent research because it strongly suggests a need for educational services for very young homeless children. And I've provided a handout that gives you the background, citations, and a summary, as well as a graph that I'm going to mention briefly today. Two of our recent papers, which were published in October and December, report on analyses of test scores in reading and math from the testing done in the Minneapolis public schools across a longitudinal time period from 2005 to 2009. They used the same test every fall across grades 3 to 8, and the data from this testing is very compelling because these tests are designed to show learning over time within individuals. And the results of these growth studies show that homeless students have significantly lower achievement even than other children who are qualified for free meals in the school district, which means their income is less than 130% of the poverty level. I've provided a graph in my handout for you showing the striking achievement gaps for reading on the last page of the testimony handout. If you look at this graph, you'll see that the homeless students start off low at the 12th percentile when they first start using the standardized test, and the gaps between the groups never close. They stay lower, significantly lower than all other children, including low-income children. Math results show similar gaps, only in the case of math, the gaps widen as the children get older. We also find that gaps are already apparent early in the school years. A paper we published in December showed similar gaps in first grade reading scores among homeless, highly mobile children. But not all children are struggling. If you look at the other figure on the same page, which is in the bottom figure, you will see the individual scores for children just looking at the homeless, highly mobile children. And some of them do very well over time. Close to half of homeless, highly mobile children show what I would call academic resilience given their circumstances. We also find that early reading skills in the first grade predict learning over time, how they will do on benchmark testing later on in their development. We've also published findings from assessments we've done in emergency shelters with very young children while they were living in shelter. And we're able to follow them into schools and see how they do. Some of these children are ready for kindergarten, but many of them are not. In our studies in shelters, we've been focusing our work on a set of cognitive skills that Senator Claussen mentioned related to brain development called executive functions. These are the self-control skills required for paying attention, listening, waiting your turn, and learning in school. These are the skills kindergarten teachers want to see in children so that they can teach them. We find these skills strongly predict early school success in children we've tested. Unfortunately, many of the children staying in emergency shelters have poor executive function skills. There's also good evidence from other research that these skills can be harmed by high levels of stress in early development, the kind of stress that many of the young homeless children have been experiencing. In the course of the research we've done over many years now, we meet many homeless young children who have fallen way behind. Their parents really want them to succeed in school. They're very interested in school success in the children. And a lot of these children that are far behind have missed out on interventions they needed, often because of the family stress or their mobility. I think early childhood is a crucial window of opportunity for these children when intervention with specialized services could have a powerful effect on their school readiness, and I can't think of a better investment for these young children. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Mastin. We really appreciate that testimony. Senator Claussen, we have another. Thank you. Please go ahead and introduce yourself.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to be here this morning to share with you the importance of early intervention services for young children who have experienced homelessness. My name is Janelle Leppa, and I am the Family Housing Programs Director at Simpson Housing Services in Minneapolis, which is a nonprofit agency providing emergency shelter, transitional housing, and long-term supportive housing programs for homeless individuals and families. Simpson Housing Services has provided emergency shelters for single adults and transitional housing for families for 30 years. In 2012, we served 193 families with 407 children. 52% of those families were considered long-term homeless, meaning they were homeless four times in the prior 3 years or were homeless for a continuous year prior to entering our program. We provide weekly in-home case management supports for parents focused around helping families achieve greater housing stability, increased income, and education goals. Over time, we have been building our capacity to respond to the needs of the young children in our programs. This focus came about in part due to the 2007 Infant Toddler Discovery Project findings that clearly articulated a need for young children to be more visible in supportive housing programs, and also the research showing that children who have experienced homelessness are far more likely to show developmental delays. In 2011, Simpson hired an early childhood consultant who helped increase our capacity to provide services to very young children and their parents. Our case managers began doing developmental assessments and partnering with parents to connect with appropriate referrals. Last year, we were able to hire an early childhood specialist on staff who does home visiting with parents of children 0 to 5 years old, focused on building parenting skills, detecting developmental delays, and connecting families with intervention services for those delays. Funding for services focused on young children in supportive housing is scarce, and Simpson was incredibly fortunate to have secured private funding for the next couple of years. Most supportive housing programs do not have the resources to provide this type of services. Funding targeted towards homeless children is vital. High mobility is so stressful for young children who have a developmental need for consistency and routine. While parents are preoccupied with meeting their family's basic needs, too often the needs of the very young children take a back seat. Children who have experienced homelessness are frequently entering school far behind their stably housed peers. From our focus on early childhood, we've come away with some key learnings. Many of the children in our program who show delays have to wait 2.5 to 3 months to have an early intervention assessment completed. Homeless children are often hidden from mainstream intervention services. They face increased challenges in often distressed systems. Strong partnerships built on trust is key. And also, many of our families face problems accessing high-quality childcare for their little ones due to families working non-traditional hours, transportation being a major barrier, and childcare is often coupled with MFIP, and that can create roadblocks. Please support the efforts to address the developmental needs of young children, young homeless children, as early as possible. As a very wise woman recently told me, we have to work for the babies so they can mature into responsible, successful adults.
Thank you very much. Such an important issue, Senator, and I am so glad that we are engaging in this important conversation. I hope that we will be talking more about this later on. I hope that during the interim we can. Today is Youth Day at the Capitol, and this is an issue that many are talking about today. So I really appreciate that you're moving with this, and we need to do a lot more. So I'm hoping that this will be one key issue during the interim for this committee and Health and Human Services and others, because we totally need to address it. Ms. Henry, I am running out of time, so I'm going to give you a brief time. I'm so glad that you're here. Thank you for coming to testify, but we're going to move briefly into your testimony and conclude remarks on this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Senators. I will be very brief. You've heard everything that I could have said about
Ms.
the
Henry,
impact
of
home.
Ms. Henry, if you could introduce yourself before you start.
My name is Sharon Henry Blythe. I apologize. My name is Sharon Henry Blythe. I am the Director of the Visible Child Initiative for the Family Housing Fund.
Thank you.
I recently, in 2006, I did a research project called the Infant Toddler Discovery Project. I interviewed 185, my colleagues and I interviewed 185 families in 17 supportive housing organizations and 2 shelters. We learned a couple of really important things. So this is my brief statement to you. We used a tool called the home inventory. The home inventory gauged the degree to which the home environment supported the child's development. One important thing we learned from our research was one-third of the infants and toddlers, the home environment seemed to support their development. By the time we got to the three-year-olds, two-thirds of the scores showed that these children were, the home environments were not able to support the children's development. That confirmed for us our theory that risk escalates with age. So by the time these children got to two and three or three to five years old, there was significant concern about the parent and the home environment supporting the child's developmental needs. In my research, I interviewed a young mom. She had 3 children, all under the age of 5, and I focused on one child during that interview. And she told me a story that has never left me. I asked her, how has he been doing, you know, in the process of the interview? She said, well, he used to bump his head up against the wall, and she motioned a lot, but he doesn't do that so much anymore. This 4-year-old had moved from north side to south side, suburb to city, and at no point in his young life had anyone identified that there was significant concern about his development, his social emotional development, and possibly his cognitive development. They were in supportive housing at the time, and the young children were still not receiving the attention that they needed. So this was a young child that was going to enter into kindergarten without the opportunity for early intervention services, which could prevent any further delay that he may have been experiencing at that time, and maybe allowed him to recover. I want to say to you that there's good news. We know what we can do. We know what works. And this is an opportunity for us to do what we know is going to work for these young children and move us towards ending generational homelessness. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Henry. I know you've been working for so long in this area, and we so appreciate your dedication and devotion to these children. It would be fantastic if we could get a copy of your report, because I think this is a conversation that we need to continue.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Senator Closen, if you could provide some closing remarks.
We've had some, excuse me, Madam Chair, we have had some excellent testifiers today. I think at this point we'd just be open to any questions you might have.
Members, do you have any questions for any of the testifiers or for Senator Clausen? Senator Wigger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to echo your appreciation as well. We're talking about the Minnesotans, through no fault of their own, are the most at-risk group in our state. And we have an obligation to improve on what they have been dealt with. And it is so much more cost-effective to have early intervention. And it's documented. You've heard the research. Just coincidentally coming in, I was listening to an NPR report on the crisis for the elderly population that's homeless and the staggering costs, through ER rooms and et cetera and healthcare. Early on, intervention, you've got it right, Senator, and your testifiers, and we need to follow up and recognize that this will reduce our costs in special education.
That's right.
And in other areas, it will have more students walking the stage for graduation and give them what every Minnesotan should have is hope and for a brighter future. So I thank you and look forward to our continued work on this.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. Senator, please go ahead and move your bill.
Madam Chair, before I do that, do you have a desire of the direction for this proposal?
Senator, this will go to finance.
Finance, very good. Madam Chair, I move that we adopt Senate File 1118 and forward to
Education Finance.
Education Finance Committee.
All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you.
I think we have Senator Hayden next. Is he here or do we? Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Ms.
Move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator.
And committee members. Today I have before you Senate File 740. I'd like to move Senate File 740, please.
Thank you, Senator. On Senate File 740, please proceed with your presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and committee members, this is a bill that focuses on vocational technical education. Its goal is to help achieve two gaps that we've talked about a lot in this committee. We've talked about the skills gap, both in this committee and in the Jobs and Economic Development Committee. And also we've spent a good deal of time in this committee addressing the achievement gap. One of the things that I'd like to share with you are just a couple facts that some of you might recall. Last year we had a good deal of hearings on a career in technical education. And I'll just share briefly. I know our time is limited, Madam Chair, so let me just share a couple brief statistics with the committee. According to our statewide Perkins data, both nationally and within Minnesota, the most significant results show that participation in career and technical education keeps kids in school. Minnesota's career and technical education completion rate, and that's defined as students who have participated in more than 240 hours of career and technical instruction, career and technical education instruction in one out of six career fields and having graduated from high school. That rate is 94.83%. And Minnesota's Nickleby graduation rate for that same group of students who have met those 240 hours of career and technical education instruction in one career field is 95.28%. And also the Minneapolis School District has done more similar analysis, and I'm sure they could, if they're here today, they could certainly share their academic performance as well in regard to that. Another item I would share with you, according to the Minnesota Department of Education's research over the last decade, it shows that 90% or more, this gets to the achievement gap, 90% or more of African American, Asian American, Latino, Hispanic, and white students who took at least 280 hours, that would be 3 to 4 semester classes, of career technical courses graduated from high school in 4 years. So the achievement gap in high school graduation is almost eliminated amongst these youngsters. Did I say it's 90% of that group that we're trying to reach graduates? So this would eliminate the achievement gap. Members, you also have in your packet, I believe it was handed out to you, a letter from the Lakes Country Service Cooperative written by the public policy chair and the past president of the Minnesota Association for Career and Technical Education. Do the members have that letter?
We do.
Okay.
We do.
Thank you. And again, it's in appreciation and full support of this legislation. I'll just read a couple items to you out of that in the middle paragraph. Again, it's regards the Career and Technical Education in Minnesota Secondary Schools successfully articulate to post-secondary education programs and institutions and must provide a part of their curriculum and instruction career development. The success of secondary career and technical education is evident by its graduation rate for its students, 98.27% in 2011. We would welcome a graduation rate like that. As compared now to the overall statewide graduation rate of 76.9%. And that letter goes on, we believe that career and technical education is a vital component of a rigorous and relevant public education experience. It's equally valuable in developing career and college readiness for all Minnesota students. And finally, developing a world-class workforce of all Minnesotans. And that's what this bill gets to. Senate File 740 develops an advisory task force to seek the best way to encourage career and technical education in our K-12 schools. I believe every one of us is aware that in our current K-12 system, we have seen that many of our voc ed departments are being trimmed back, or in some cases, they have been outright cut. And the result is a skills gap, and that's something we often talk about in the Jobs Committee. Our employers are seeing a skills gap. They're not getting students who have the skills that they need. So I'm seeking to find more ways to collaborate and for concurrent education between our high schools and our two-year technical institutions. There are models to explore. And this bill seeks to form a task force to seek the best ways of making this work in Minnesota. And the bill before you, I can walk through it briefly if you would like, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Yes, Senator, please.
All right. Section 1 develops a Career and Technical Education Advisory Task Force. It lists the recommendations that task force must make to the legislature. Those recommendations include things that we have talked about in this committee: alignment between secondary and post-secondary education, alignment between education programs and our workforce needs, something that we have discussed both in this committee, certainly, and in the Jobs Committee. Efficiency and cost effectiveness of our public secondary and post-secondary programs, something we all seek to do, And, of course, then advisory task force must examine the role of education providers, employers, policymakers, and other interested stakeholders in realizing these improvements. It's kind of removing those silos that we have talked about so often in education. This is tying education to the workforce. I think that's really the gist of the bill. Section B talks about the further things to consider, which we have talked about as well, informing students about career options, occupational trends. I think sometimes that is missing. Students need to know where are the trends, where are the job trends. Educational paths leading to viable and rewarding careers. Certainly development of an education work plan for each student. We worked on that last year in the bills passed out of this committee. And monitoring students' achievement levels, prepare high school students for their career goals, and increase rates at which students complete a post-secondary certificate, industry licensure, or degree. Section C talks about aligning Minnesota's secondary and post-secondary education programs, talks about some of the things that needed to be done there. Section D talks about alignment to Minnesota's workforce needs. And Section E talks about the efficient and cost effectiveness. So I know the committee has lots before it, but that's kind of the bill. I think it's all things that we've talked about in this committee and others. And Madam Chair, I certainly would stand for questions.
Thank you so much, Senator. I appreciate this. I wanted to ask you a question about the grades. You know, I happen to have a sophomore, and I think that he is so ready to go to work. He thinks that he's going to have business. He's going to create his own business and design this device that society needs to, you know, improve the world.
So, yes.
Sophomores, it's interesting. 10th grade is kind of that beginning of that conversation about what is that they are going to accomplish in life.
Yes.
And it's an opportunity for us to start talking about, you know, build some technical skills, because you cannot get to that, you know, going to the moon. There are some things that you need to do, like, you know, learning your computer, you know, improving computer skills or something like that. And I think they welcome that because they're so eager to learn the skills. I don't know if you had a reason to start in 11, but I was thinking that 10 is such an important grade. I don't know.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator.
Grade 10 is a critical grade. I can't give you a good answer as to why we started with 11th grade, if it has to do with maybe some of the way data is already tracked regarding some of the Perkins things or some of the career and technical education. But, you know, Madam Chair, it also could be the fact that grade 11 up until last year was the year that we first allowed post-secondary options. But legislation that we passed last year has now opened that up to 10th graders to great success.
Right.
And so, Madam Chair, if you would like to amend my bill, I certainly would have no problems putting this into 10th grade. But maybe that's something I could do in conference committee as well. But certainly I think it's a very I think it's a great idea.
Thank you. Thank you, Senator. Whatever is your preference, I just thought that it might be a good idea to think about it.
Madam Chair, it is. And might I take that up in conference committee?
Thank you so much.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you for this, Senator Nelson. I think this is really exciting and important part of this whole evolution. I just want to add to this most recent discussion about the age. In the Higher Education and Workforce Development Committee, we're having similar conversations. And, in fact, there's legislation that I think is moving forward from DEED and working with the workforce the workforce centers.
Yes.
And the workforce centers currently are working with students as young as 14. And there's a pilot program that will begin to expand their involvement in marrying up some of the data needs that you're talking about and bringing those into the schools even more. So all these pieces are coming together. So I think this is a wonderful part of the equation. So thank you.
Thank you. Any more questions, Senator Clausen?
Yes. And again, thank you, Senator Nelson. Just a couple comments. I've had the opportunity to write Perkins grants, so I'm familiar with that. And 3 years ago, the state restructured the Perkins consortiums so that the secondary schools are aligned with a post-secondary institution. So what you're describing will fit very well into the established patterns that we have in the state for dealing with
post-secondary education and career and technical education. In responding to that grade 11-12 issue, many times secondary schools rely upon post-secondary institutions to provide the program, so there's a travel issue. So they travel to a technical college for that instruction, and so many times as a 10th grader, your schedule is fairly full, and it's not till 11th grade that you have an opening where you can actually get 2 hours of your schedule to do that. Also, I know there's a movement to Project Lead the Way courses in our high schools, and I think that's another great opportunity as well. And from my experience in working within the consortium, I think the consortium needs what you've described in that that study that is going to be conducted by the task force, because I think there's more information that needs to be passed down to those consortiums about employment trends, needs for the future, so we can restructure and keep ahead of the game, so to speak, in what are the programs that we're offering. So I think that's very good. One maybe friendly amendment or idea, I didn't see where you have any career technical education teachers involved in that task force. Now, I may have missed that, but I think that would be important that we have representation. Thank you.
Senator.
Senator. Yes.
Senator Claussen, I think that's a very important piece. I would like to ask you if line 2.36, would that address that concern? Minnesota Association of Career and Technical Administrators, and then the second, and then after that on the next page, the Minnesota Association for Career and Technical Education. Aren't those the folks that you're talking about?
Yeah.
Or am I missing something?
Madam Chair, Senator Nelson, many times those are more the administrators that deal with the programs. And I know in line 3.6, it says, and other representatives selected by the task force. But I just think it specifically pointing out career and technical education teachers that are licensed in that area would be good to addition.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Claussen, I will certainly make that note and find out. They definitely need to be represented. I think that, and what I can't tell is if some of these other organizations would encompass that or not, but certainly that is something I will take to conference committee, and I would welcome that inclusion if it's not already in the language.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Thank you, Senator Claussen. Any other questions? Senator Wieger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Excellent proposal. I'm sure Senator Jen Olson would like to be a co-author here and think of her on this as well. Last session, we authorized for 10th graders to take a vocational type course for PSEO,
yes.
And that's just being rolled out now, and I'm looking very forward, as all of us are, for data on that. I don't have language, but maybe along the way we can get some results on this program. We had even talked about it in ninth grade,
yes.
But thought that might be too early. But I just wanted to throw that as an initiative that we supported to address this as well. So perhaps language later as it makes its journey.
Madam Chair.
Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. I also would like to thank my co-sponsors, Senator Wieger, Senator Rood, Senator Torres-Ray, and Senator Stumpf. And Senator Wieger, I appreciate your reference to Senator Jen Olson. We could call this the Senator Jen Olson bill, I think. With that, Madam Chair, might I renew my motion that this bill be recommended to pass? And would it go to the Senate floor? I don't know that there's any other stuff.
Actually, it goes to state and local government because of the task force.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Senator Wieger.
Yes, Madam Chair. And just a friendly reminder that when we form task forces, when the commissioner has task forces, we're looking at a lot of recommendations this session on task forces that put together thoughts on testing, school funding, et cetera. And so I think the key is getting a process in place where you have a lot of the various stakeholders, as you have here, and then paying a great deal of attention to the results. So I subscribe to that model.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator. So Senator Nelson moves that 740 be recommended to pass and re-refer to state government. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Carlson. Senator Hayden is conferencing a committee, and obviously he's having trouble leaving that room, so we will be patient. So we're going to try to, you know, kind of move through the agenda and probably leave him for the last part of the agenda. Senator Carlson, you have Senate File 897, Online Learning.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have Senate File 897, and I move that for consideration by the committee.
Thank you. On Senate File 897, Senator.
Members of the committee, Madam Chair, thank you for hearing Senate File 897. This bill expands the existing aim of the Online Learning Council by renaming it the Online Digital Learning Council, expanding the membership from 12 to 14 members, and moving back the sunset date of the council from June 2013 to June 2016. The board, approved by the commissioner, will be made up of two members of the technology industry. The remainder will be made up of those representing the interests of superintendents, special education specialists, technology directors, teachers, rural, urban, and suburban school districts, supplemental programs, full-time programs, consortia, charter schools, Board of Teaching approved teacher preparation programs, and of course, parents. The Advisory Council will report to the legislature and the commissioner annually on issues relating to online learning. For additional information and for testimony, we have the High Tech Association here, and also, I'm sorry, we have Mr. John Voss and we have Mr. John Tollefson, who will explain and expand and answer any questions that you might have. And with that, I'd introduce Mr. John Voss.
Thank you, Senator. Please proceed with your testimony, Mr. Voss, and identify yourself again.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Jonathan Voss. I work with Intermediate District 287 and am currently the chair of the Online Advisory Council that operates today. I just wanted to give a brief overview of what the council has worked on in the last 3 years and also in the previous version of it from 2006 to 2008. Most recently, we've advised the Department of Education on responding to the legislative audit of 2011, primarily the revision of the review process for online learning providers. We've provided midterm recommendations on how to handle the growth and the change that's taking place in digital learning in a number of areas related to department policy. There have been also a couple of projects that we have worked on in the past year that were passed from last year's legislative session. One of them, a catalog of digital curriculum that's aligned to Minnesota standards so that teachers can find digital resources quickly and easily. That will be coming online in May and June. And then a review of all of the laws and policies that impact digital learning that will also be completed yet this year. One of the biggest things that we've worked on is the communication, outreach, and coordination among schools and districts to help them understand what initiatives are taking place. There's a lot of really impressive things that districts are trying and experimenting with, and we share those with the districts around the state and also with the department so that they can get a better handle on how policies are going to affect changes that are happening now. So we have a committed group of volunteers that works very hard with limited resources and are looking forward to working with the High Tech Association and taking on some additional responsibilities and looking into some further areas in the future.
Thank you, Mr. Voss. Please proceed.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is John Tollefson. I'm the director or the manager of public policy at the Minnesota High Tech Association. Thank you for having me here today, and thank you to Senator Carlson for carrying this bill and the co-authors. The Minnesota High Tech Association believes that this committee, or this advisory council, could be a more effective resource for state decision makers if it expands in the way that the bill proposes, and specifically to include two members of industry to advise the council on what technology is available and what is coming available, as well as to make the advisory council report to the Senate and House E-12 committees each year by the end of the year on their recommendations. And it expands the scope to include digital learning, so all forms of technology that could assist students, and to identify methodology that would help state decision makers understand how technology can actually benefit education, not so it's simply used in the classroom, but how it can affect education and how it can aid teachers as they improve learning and individualized learning of students. So it really is meant to have a broader scope and more effect in that process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much. Questions, members, for Mr. Voss or Mr. Tolson? Senator Carlson, it has been brought to my attention that if we count the representatives that you have listed, if we have one member for rural, one for urban, one for suburban, the count is 15 members, not 14. So the staff has a question for you. You could have a representative that represents two different areas of the areas that you listed, or it could be that you change to 15. So it's up to you to kind of look into line 0.19. You have 14 members. And then from line 113 to 123, if we count those representatives for those different groups, we have 15. So, I don't know if you think that, there will be a member representing two of the areas, because that could very well happen and you only have 14, but it is up to you.
Madam Chair, I'm advised here that the intent was to have a cross-representation, not necessarily an individual for each one.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. Any questions, Senator Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Carlson, this is a great bill. Digital learning holds the promise of allowing every student to achieve individualized instruction at their own place, their own path, their own pace. And it allows schools to, and it allows that model, which historically has been so incredibly expensive, to actually be scaled up. And I also want to thank you for building on the digital learning bill that we passed last year. And I'd also like to thank Mr. Voss for his work. I am on completing the things that we requested last year. I am waiting to see those items, specifically the digital learning resource catalog. Our teachers need that resource so that they have the ability to easily see which online resources have been aligned to our Minnesota standards and use those in their classroom. And also, I'm looking forward to the task force that will help us determine how best to use that catalog to somehow also tie to student achievement using those resources. I know that was something we felt we couldn't actually design at the legislative level, and so I look forward to hearing the council's report on that as well. And then the review of our current rules, regs, laws, and how they impact digital learning, which is transforming education. It really will. And so I have a couple questions and then one amendment that I hope will be considered a friendly amendment. My questions, Mr. Voss, are, one, when will we see that digital online catalog of resources, and particularly the report that's going to help us determine the rating aspect of that catalog as far as student achievement. And then secondly, when will we see that report about a review of our current rules, regs, laws, and how they impact digital learning? And then I'll get to my hopefully friendly amendment next.
Mr. Voss, would you have answers for Senator Nelson?
Certainly. Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Nelson, yes, it was interesting to work on that last year, and I appreciate all of your support and the things that we did there. The date that had been put on those projects was June 30th, and we're doing everything we can to finish those projects sooner so that we can report back to the legislature while it's still in session. The developers are busily building the alpha version of it, and we hope to have the beta version ready in April, and we'd be able to share that when that is open. And the same with the report. We've been collecting information on the laws and regulations, sifting through some of the ones that we know have impact, exploring some of the others, and again, while June 30th was the target, we would certainly hope to be able to report back while the session is still in progress. So we're shooting for April and possibly the beginning of May if we have to.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair. So might I make a friendly amendment then, which I think gets to what you are saying, and I know Senator Carlson is very interested in getting proceeding with the digital learning aspect as well. I noticed on line 2.12 that you that this date was actually struck by June 30th, 2013, which means, well, we don't know. Maybe we wouldn't get that report until some point later. And based on your comments that you are working to even get it to it to get this to us earlier, Senator Claussen, would you accept my friendly amendment of unstriking the language in 2.12 by June 30th, 2013? The intent then would be to leave that date in there.
Yeah, Madam Chair,
Senator,
unfortunately, we did not have a chance to talk about this before the hearing here, but give me a moment here.
We're also consulting with staff because that will apply for the future.
So just for paragraphs.
Yes. So, Senator, if the change is made, it is clear to the staff that the change will apply only to C, Section C, which it goes from line 212 to 220.
Madam Chair, we're discussing when the change takes effect here, and I'm not sure if we don't have a date on here. This doesn't the changes become effective the 1st of August?
Madam Chair,
Senator Nelson,
Madam Chair, Senator Claussen, the original language. In the digital online learning bill, which you see before you, included that date by June 30th, 2013, that online digital learning catalog will be brought to the legislature. And I guess my question is, if you recall those that were here last year, we backed up the request for this at the request of the Minnesota Department of Education because they weren't sure if they were going to they hired a new person actually to help provide support for this very reason. And that's why we backed up the date to June 30th. And so based on your testimony and the fact that the department hired someone specifically to work on online learning and testified in favor of this. I just can see no reason why there's any harm in saying by June 30th, 2013, the legislature should get this information. I just haven't heard any testimony today to suggest why that date should be stricken. I do think it's important that we get that information available to our teachers. Learning and today's environment moves at the speed of light, and we've been waiting a long time.
Thank you, Senator.
We just want to put this date back. It's just, which should be fine. I think it's okay. We just need to stick it after C rather than before C now. But structurally, it doesn't work.
You see, sometimes dates are very important. We have to ponder and
Madam
just think
Chair,
about it.
So,
Senator Johnson.
I don't think Senator Carlson is opposed to having
right.
requiring the catalog by June 30th. I think the issue is how do we make that clear in this bill, and that it only applies to that one thing. So don't maybe we
Senator,
could work
will
on it
go,
later.
That's a good point. This goes to finance next, so you will have another hearing on it, Senator Carlson. If you want time, you have time.
Okay.
Plenty of time. We end tomorrow, but you know this is a change that you can make in finance if you wish to have more consultation. It's up to you.
Well, Madam Chair, with what we've been discussing here, that if we would put that date back in, we would have to put it after the C, which would make it only for item C.
Oh, Madam Chair. I'll amend my motion or my amendment to reflect that, and that is the intent, that it only apply to this section as it did in the original legislation.
Thank you, and I think staff has some recommendation. Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair, members, assuming this bill goes forward, and I assume the possibility is that it be folded into an omnibus finance bill,
mm-hmm.
Or is it, if I don't know what the intent is, but...
Right. It goes to finance, and then they will decide.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, if it is unfolded into an omnibus finance bill, the effective date would be July 1, 2013. So it actually would go into effect the day after the report is, or the catalog is due.
Senator Nelson.
Madam Chair, my question is, though, recommend methods for including student performance data. So can't we have those recommendations by June 30th?
Right.
Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, you can have them by June 30th, but the either taking the date away or keeping the date in happens after you already get the recommendations. So you really don't need the date because you're going to get it before it would go into effect.
Okay, Senator, why don't we move the bill, and then you can continue to work with Senator Nelson to see where the location should be and what the actual date should be, if it should be July or if you need the date at all. So why don't you go ahead and proceed and move this. Senator
Wigger. I'll withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Senator Nelson. Senator Wigger.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and Senator Testifier. It's a great challenge and charge that you have there. I'm very aware that there's many opportunities in online digital learning for early learners and a great deal of high-tech programs available right now, as well as for post-secondary. We have a P20 council that the legislature is a part of that looks at integrating, you know, the entire system. May there be some modification or, you know, additional thought as to how this would interface with early and post-secondary.
Senator Carlson?
Any well, those are good points. Digital learning, as I often refer to my own education, is that, you know, we insert a funnel in some part of our head, and digital learning is a new funnel for young people that are younger than most of us. And I agree that what we need to do is we need to make it as early as possible, because I think the funnel works best for the young people. So if there's something, perhaps I can discuss it with you and we can see if there's anything that we can add on to this.
Senator Carlson, we also have been told that in line 315, perhaps the recommendation was that you actually name digital, because it is not. It says the online learning, and so that we have a word missing in there.
Yes, Madam Chair. That was going to be a suggestion that we were going to put on before I moved the bill, to put in "and" between the words "online learning." So the Online and Digital Learning Advisory Council is the appropriate name.
Thank you. So let's move on that. On that amendment, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Wiig.
Madam Chair, just as a follow-up on the question I posed, and you indicated, Senator Carlson, and we could discuss that, but if you could get input from your testifiers along the way and others, I think there's acknowledgement that we need to do this, or do we take this in various projects, get this done first, and then look at early learning and that. But I think it's better to do it comprehensively, so we'll continue that conversation as it moves.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Greer. Nelson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just very briefly, to Senator Wieger's point, and something that maybe Senator Carlson might want to do in that regard. I believe in my conversations with the Minnesota High Tech Association and some of the higher education consortiums, they actually are also considering a very similar type of digital resources online catalog. And so maybe this would be a great time to try and align those initiatives.
Great ideas. Thank you, members. I know that all of you, especially Senator Nelson, has come to talk to me often about how much work we need to do in this direction, and certainly it's the future and a lot of opportunities for us. So it's an important conversation that we need to continue. Senator Carlson, are you ready to make a motion?
Yes. Madam Chair, I move that Senate File 897 as amended be recommended to pass and forwarded to to state and local governments.
To finance.
I'm sorry, we'll go to finance before.
To finance first, yes.
Education finance.
All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator. Senator Hayden is not here, so we're going to continue. Senator Clausen.
Yes, Madam Chair. Yesterday during our meeting, we had considerable discussion and voted on Senate File 1224, which required basic skills for teacher candidates. And following that vote, you may recall that I addressed the committee indicating that I really felt that this proposal, Senate File 1224, needed to be amended. And in that vein, I am requesting reconsideration of Senate File 1224 today, please.
So, Senator, you are recommending that we bring that back, or do you have an amendment, or what is your recommendation?
Okay.
So you want to reconsider first.
Yes, I want to reconsider.
Let's see if the members are ready to reconsider, and then we'll talk about what you want to do. Members, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do see this on the agenda, I think, already, and I certainly have no issue with reconsidering this important bill, because I do think it has some very important aspects, and we definitely want to make sure that we know that teachers are the number one in-school variable, effective teachers, and regarding student achievement, so we want to make sure we get that right. I just have a brief comment, Madam Chair. This will be the third time now that we've addressed this in this committee. And I just have to note that I have three non-controversial education bills that I'm still waiting to get my first hearing on. And I don't know, that might apply to other members too. And I know our time is very limited in this committee, but I just think it bears out that this is the third time we've looked at this bill, and I'm hoping that by doing so, we are not eliminating certainly the three bills I'm mentioning, and other members may have other non-controversial education bills that need to get a hearing as well.
Any comments? I know Thank you, Senator Nelson. I struggle with the same thing. Yesterday, I don't know if you were able to watch the news, and this morning there was a report as well about some of the teachers that came to us who were in tears because we did not make a decision. And I think that the report basically said that we were not capable of making a decision one way or the other. And I know that that's actually not true, that we are making decisions. It's just this is not a simple decision. We have to it's clear that we have some teachers out there for whom this decision actually means their jobs, that they will not be able to continue. So we didn't offer a plan for them, and so we're caught in a situation where it's a, you know, kind of a, let's make a decision to delete this language or not, but the consequence for these individuals is actually that they will not be able to continue to do their work. So I don't know, Senator Clausen, I know we have to entertain the motion before we go into this, but I would like to know, you know, I don't know if we have to have a different approach, right, because we cannot entertain two things that we have already said no to. But members, if you don't mind, you know, I presume this is a different proposal, but because we have made a decision twice. So if we could move to entertain your motion and then engage in the conversation, is that okay with the members? Because I cannot engage in the conversation about what this next proposal is without taking this vote.
I don't know the rules, but I Robert's rules, but is a motion to reconsider debatable? Yes. I think you just take a vote on it. No. Is what the rules would say.
Let me consult with staff about
it. Absolutely this. Debatable.
Yeah, yes, it's debatable. Checked it this morning, Madam Chair.
Okay. Oh, did you? Okay.
Okay.
After it's so, it's the motion to consider. And that's
okay, so there is a motion before us to reconsider, Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wanted to point out, I think that the folks who say a decision hasn't been made, frankly, are being unfair to you as the chair and being unfair to the members of this committee. You gave us a lot of time to debate this. In fact, frankly, more than you probably preferred. And a lot of things were aired. Not only was a decision made, it was made via roll call in the journal to be very clear about where the members stand, and a decision was made. It's just certain people don't like the decision that was made, but that's how this body works. So I think to imply to media or otherwise, various interested folks that a decision wasn't made is not fair to this committee. A lengthy debate was had twice, and a decision was made clearly on the record.
Senator Nino?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to reiterate what Senator Thompson said, I was going to say basically the same thing. And to Senator Nelson's comments, I'm going to be voting against the motion to reconsider because I think it was the right decision to not pass the bill. It was a decisive decision. This will, as Senator Nelson said, this will now be the third time this particular proposal is in front of this committee. And we have the omnibus policy bill coming before this committee later today for an overview to be presented to us so that we can review it. And we're going to spend all, according to the chair, all day tomorrow on that bill. So unless we have a meeting that gets scheduled on Friday, Senator Nelson, your bills are not going to get heard to make deadline. And we're burning up time on a decision that was decisively made. I think we should move on. That's my opinion.
Hey, Senators, Senator Rood?
Madam Chair, I would concur. You know, typically when we make a motion to reconsider, it's on a bill that passed by maybe one vote, and it was very close, and the committee was divided. But yesterday that was not the case. This was a very decisive. I believe it was 10-1, 10-4. And so I think it was very decisive what we decided, and I also think that we should move on into this bill has more than been given its time.
Call the question.
Any other?
Madam Chair, request a roll call.
You on the motion to reconsider Senate File 1224. We are going to take a vote, and the clerk will call the roll. Please go ahead, Brad. Yes.
To reconsider.
Yes, sure. To reconsider.
Senator Torres Ray.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
No.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain.
No.
Senator Clausen.
Yes.
Senator Franzen. Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Nienau.
No.
Senator Peterson. Senator Rood.
No.
Senator Thompson.
No.
Senator Wieger.
Yes.
Senator Wicklin.
Yes.
On an 8-5, 8 being yes, 5 no's, and a motion to reconsider Senate File 1224, the motion passes. Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I do have an amendment. And would you rather me sit here or at the testifier's table for that?
Why don't you go to the testifier's table, Senator? Senator Nienau.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick comment. Madam Chair, Senator Wieger, we were basically done with our debate when you called the question. But, Senator Wieger, don't do that. We're better than that.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
And members, this is not a battle that I was even wanting to have when I came to the legislature this year. This was, two bills that were brought to me by House members. But, again, upon hearing the story of many of the teachers that have been affected, after yesterday's vote, that young woman who testified here was in tears in the hallway, and she said, I don't have a plan B. Here's a girl who went to college to get a teaching degree, and now she has no options. This is also a bill for Dan Devine, who is out of options in Pillager in terms of his art career as a teacher up there. So this is this amendment, I really believe, addresses many of your concerns. And again, I'm only thinking about those young teachers and the thousands of others that are in a similar situation. You all have the A6 amendment. If I haven't already moved it, I believe I did move that, correct?
Senator, yes, let's move the A6 amendment.
Let me quickly go through the – did you vote on that? Okay.
Yes. Senator, go ahead and proceed.
If you look at the amendment, I'll be very clear and quick about it. It does the A6, it does take out the date subdivision 2 and B, because basically I'm going to keep the basic skills test in place. That's the first very important point that I want to make. The other, we look at some of the other, page 3, talking about deleting new language. I can walk you through the bill if you have the bill in front of you and those sections on page 3 that talk
Madam
about
Chair.
Deletions. And so I'm moving already because everything else stays. And by the way, I understand at the bottom of the bill that yesterday's amendment regarding instead of must provide, that at the request of, it is still intact. So that would be a little bit different there. We did approve that yesterday.
Madam Chair, Senator Dahl, I'm sorry to interrupt, but I'm becoming extremely confused. I would simply request that we take the amendment and go step by step from the amendment to this bill and show us what's in and what's out, because this is a big amendment, and I want to make sure what I'm looking at here. So I just respectfully request that we go step by step through this bill from the amendment to what's changed on this.
I'll do that. And
thank you.
Senator, okay, Senator Chamberlain, the request, Senator Dahl, is that if you could just explain the differences between, that you are adopting now, the changes that you make that are significant so that the members understand what the amendment does.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. And so, again, looking at the bill, 1224, and Ms. Butler, correct me if I'm wrong, but we are eliminating the date on line 110. That'll be gone. Okay. My understanding on line 122 to 124, that remains, but, again, yesterday's amendment did make that less prescriptive, so that would be in place. It's not evident in this particular language, but it allows the school district to give remedial help at the request. I'm looking at page 2 now. The amendment removes line 233 through 235. So basically, I'm eliminating a teacher is not required to pass an examination of skills. They still will be required to pass an examination of skills.
And, Senator, if you could stop there for a moment, I want to remind members that this is actually the most important section in this bill where we had some disagreement about we need to take action. To figure out what is that we need to do since we have so many people who are not passing the test. We had the discussion about, whether or not this was a basic skill test or not. But the difference of opinion here has been that some of us believe that we shouldn't have the basic skills test, and some of you believe that we should. How we change it later on, not to be basic or not basic, we will have more conversations about it. But I think what Senator Dahl is doing is affirming that desire of the committee that we should not delete the basic skill test. So that's the main difference. Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I'm a little confused. Maybe I'm missing something, but the amendment is for a subdivision 4. I don't see subdivision 2, which contains the elimination of the test, coming out of here.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, if you look at the amendment on page 3, it does have the deletion language. If you look at the amendment on line, and that would be on line 39.
I would like to ask the staff, Ms. Butler, is that correct? Could you
sure.
make sure that we are understanding this the way the author and the members would like to see it?
Sure. Madam Chair, members, on the amendment, on the A6 amendment, lines 3.9 and 3.10 delete that paragraph F that's on starts on page 2 of the Senate file as introduced. And that, I believe that's a paragraph that Senator Torres Ray was making comments on about the skills exam.
So the basic skills exam stays, correct? Which is,
Madam Chair, members, yes. That's a couple of spots on this amendment that makes it stay, but that those two lines that I pointed out are the ones that delete the paragraph F on page 2, and that goes into page 3, where it says there's no skills exam after a certain date.
Okay, I'll try it.
So we're deleting that portion that was in the bill to actually eliminate the basic skills test. So that's being deleted, which means that language will stay. I hope that's clear, and I hope that the author is able to, Senator, if you could explain your intent, too, because
yes.
I think people want to trust that what you're doing is really responding to their concerns.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And again, before we move off of page 2, again, on the bill is what I'm following. We still keep, that person who's completed approved teacher preparation program on line 211, has not passed the skills, may have the board renew the temporary license, provide evidence of participating in approved remedial, attempts to pass the skills test during the year licensure, and that they also, the school district, have to request that they are wanting to keep them as a licensed teacher. So now I'm on page 3 of the bill. And again, it does eliminate on line 3. It does remove the reference there to paragraph F in both lines 3.3 and 3.4, which was the one we just removed. And then on the rest of that page 3 is intact. Page 4. We on page 4 23, starting with the word notwithstanding, we eliminate the rest of that section all the way down to 4.27. So again, clear language. It says a teacher is not required to pass an examination of skills. That's eliminated. It's all gone. Moving on 4.33, we just changed the word basic to college level. Some confusion about what basic skills is. On page 5.11, we remove the reference to public teacher because this should apply to all schools. Page 5.22, after disabilities and, we include a sentence that says, including an appeals process if required for accommodations is denied. We also, starting on 5.23, we add words about a detailed item analysis to give some more feedback on the test. I believe, on page 6 of the bill, we do in the task force, we do add two representatives from the business community, so we are eliminating, that's what ultimately that's what we're trying to do in the task force, adding two representatives from the business community. So, members and Madam Chair, again, this is not how I usually operate. I don't remember any time in the 3 years that I've actually voted to take something off the table. I'm a good loser. I can go home. I believe that there's a problem that still needed addressing with this issue. And I believe that I've tried to do that in this particular amendment. We do have a lot of business that we need to cover, but the kind of legislation that I was carrying yesterday, it really was all about how can I help these individuals. This isn't about me. This is about keeping good teachers in the classroom. I have 30 emails in regard to my editorial in the Star Tribune yesterday, and I haven't even looked today after the WCCO report last night, but every one of them sympathetic. Principals, young students coming out of college, teachers that are in a predicament right now. So, members, that's all I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to anything other than that. This is really about a couple of three people that I've met that I think they really needed some help with at this time. And I would hope that the task force does take a good look at what we're doing in terms of the basic skills test. You know, if let's keep it, but make sure it's the right test that really works to make sure that we are trying to determine what are the minimum standards of basic skills that we need. Thank you.
I know, Senator, this has been a tough journey for you. And as I said yesterday, I do appreciate this, obviously. Some of us will not get the 100%. I was with you in the first try. And I believe that what you're trying to do was right. I never believed that this was a basic skill test. We are having problems recruiting teachers in Minneapolis, and we pay more than any other district. So, however, I do applaud your efforts because I do know that a good number of this committee actually completely disagree with me, completely. as a chair, I just believe that I couldn't move forward with, you know, trying to put a proposal that was not really a proposal that some members could support at all. So it seems that you and Senator Clausen had an opportunity to meet yesterday. This work has to continue. We have significant problems with teachers who have not passing the test. One of the most significant problems, if you recall, members, was the problem that a professor from Oxford University brought to us about the number of teachers of color who actually are not able to pass and non-English speaking teachers. I happen to take that personally, and I think I said that at the beginning of our conversation. I had a sister who struggled to pass the tests, who taught for 16 years before she came to Minnesota. And she is just remarkable. She's been a kindergarten teacher for so many years, and she couldn't pass a math test. So I know that there are conversations about reviewing math and then reviewing the other exams. I hope that we continue this work. Senator, this is incredibly important. You have my commitment to do what is right. I don't want to lower the bar because that will be wrong. I always question when people talk of affirmative action jobs, that they question whether I was affirmatively hired, whether or not I had the credentials. I don't like that. So I think that there is a room for excelling and building quality in our system without lowering the bar. We must do that for our kids. So I hope that this is being done with that in mind, and I will hear from a couple more members, and then we will vote. Senator Nelson, Senator Thompson, Senator Peterson, Senator Chamberlain, Senator Kent. So if you remember that order, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, I appreciate the fact that you cleaned up this bill. So thank you for that. There is one, and it's so slight, but I think it carries great significance, and I would like you to reconsider. If you would look at your A6 amendment, line 3.18, page 5, your amendment calls for on page 5, lines 11, 14, and 20, to delete the word public. And I would ask members to look at the bill and see what that does. I cannot support this. This is suddenly taking the Minnesota Board of Teaching and all Minnesota teacher preparation for public teachers and programs and institutions and saying it's for all teachers. And I think that is quite a point of departure to suddenly say we are going to apply this to all teachers. I certainly think that would be something that would warrant a hearing of its own. So I would encourage you, or if you'd like, I'll make the amendment to strike line 318 in the A6 amendment. I think that is certainly something maybe worthy of discussion, but certainly not
Senator,
not good for this bill.
I have been the staff is clarifying. Please, if you could, Ms. Butler, the word "public" here is for public programs. Could you explain, Ms. Butler?
Madam Chair and members, I believe the word "public" there was relating to the preparation programs, and the programs are at public and private institutions, higher ed institutions. It's not. I don't think it relates to the teacher or where they're going to teach. It's where they're getting their teacher education.
Senator Nelson.
So my question is, does Senator Dahl's amendment deleting the word "public" here, does it somehow expand then? The Board of Teaching's role in teacher preparation programs at private institutions. I do not want to expand government into private institutions simply by deleting the word "public" in three places in this amendment.
Ms. Buffler.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, no, it doesn't expand their role. They already have to, the Board of Teaching already has to approve the teacher preparation programs, even at the private institutions, in order for them to confer the certificates for their graduates. So they have private institutions, higher ed institutions, have to comply with what the Board of Teaching requirements are for those programs.
Senator Nelson. One more question in that regard. I believe, are there not teacher prep programs in some higher education institutions, private institutions, that are not accredited programs? And I would be worried that this would apply to those.
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, no. They're not. If they're approved by the Board of Teaching and they're a private institution, that's the only way that they could confer a degree that or a certificate that the state would recognize.
Madam Chair.
Senator Johnson, to that point.
Yes. Mm-hmm. It seems to me that if we take the word "public" out, in fact, Senator Nelson, then it might include some private teacher preparation programs that they offer in their private institution that are not required to be certified. So taking "public" out would make it more imposing on private institutions.
Madam Chair.
Senator Nelson.
Senator Johnson, you have made my point exactly.
Okay.
That is why I am making an amendment, Senator Dahl's amendment to strike line 318 out of the A6 amendment, because that specifically, line 318 in the A6 amendment, specifically does what you said. It strikes the word public, and now one these sections 4, 5, and 7 would be applicable to non-public. And I'm just saying that is worthy of a major discussion, certainly nothing we can do in a little amendment like this.
Ms. Butler, you're here.
Balmer.
Balmer, excuse me. Ms. Balmer, if you could you please help us make sure, because I think we're debating line 318, if you have been tracking this, whether or not deleting the word public will create, will expand this to private institutions. Could you clarify this and let us know if that would be the actual consequence of deleting the word public or not?
Madam Chair and Senator Nelson, good morning. Karen Balmer with the Board of Teaching. What you've heard from Senate Counsel Ms. Butler is absolutely right. We already have within our under our purview 31 institutions, and they are comprised of Minsky institutions, University of Minnesota institutions, and a host of private institutions that independently elect to go through our accrediting process. And we have two different processes for them. So once they're approved, then what you've heard again is exactly right, that they abide by our teacher licensing standards and requirements, go through our ongoing accreditation processes, and as such are able to recommend candidates for licensure. As I'm reading this, it relates to the work of the task force recommendations and the impact of those task force recommendations, which of course is very closely tied to what we do on the teacher preparation and accrediting side. But this, so this would be picked up in the recommendations and the work of the task force, as I'm understanding it. But right now, all of our requirements do apply uniformly, regardless of the type of institution.
So, Ms. Balmer, the question is simple from Senator Nelson, right? Do we have to take the word public into consideration? Do we have to delete it in order to conserve the standard? Do we have to have it? And we're not risking. See, she's afraid that we are going to, that there is a risk in there, that we're creating a standard that will apply to private. And I think what Ms. Butler is telling me right now is actually the opposite. We do need the word to delete the word public, because that creates an equal standard for everyone. And if we don't have the word, actually, the opposite is true. So I just want to make clear, you know, her question is concerned about the fact that public, that if we delete the word public, it will affect the private institutions. Could you make clear, do we need the word delete in here? The staff says that we do, but we just want to make absolutely clear that we're not doing something that, you know, is not an unintended consequence.
Madam Chair, as I'm understanding this, if the goal is to have uniform sort of operational procedures and outcomes from the task force recommendations, then if that is the goal, then yes, you would want to take the word public out, because
correct,
we do have different types of institutions. So if the objective is to make sure that all at all institutions there's compliance with this this recommendation to make available the scope of the assessment, which we have, and we will continue to host that.
That's the point. The point is we already do that. So in order to continue, that's what you're saying, correct? So we already have that standard that applies to all. So if we don't have the word delete, then we have to think about how are we going to split it, right?
Madam Chair, the Board of Teaching already do this. We make available all of this, and so I don't. This may be a better question actually for the MACD folks. I don't honestly know exactly what they already make available. I know that it's available on the testing website, and So I'm trying to make sure that I'm true to the spirit of what's intended here. But if again, if the intent is to make it uniformly applicable to all institutions that sit under our purview, then the word public would not do that. And taking public out would make it a uniform expectation of all those institutions.
Senator Clausen, on that motion.
Yeah, this was actually...
I didn't finish my question.
This may be clarifying, because this was one thing that I put in there, and I actually put in public and private, because I know that teacher licensure applies to all institutions that are accredited by the Board of Teaching in the state, and I wanted to make it clear that this would apply to both public and private.
Which already does, right?
Which it already does. And so in the end result was we struck public rather than adding the word and private.
Okay.
Madam Chair. Senator Nelson. So to my point, let me just narrow it a little bit finer. All of our discussion with Ms. Ballmer has been about those institutions, those higher education institutions that are offering certified education teacher preparation programs. I know that there are religious institutions that offer teacher preparation programs that are not certified. Those teachers know they pass those education programs, but they're not certified teachers, yet they are teachers who may be teaching in some of those religious schools. I want to protect that. Not every teacher preparation program is a certified teacher preparation program. And my fear is that by striking the word public, we would be interfering in that arena. And I think the discussion today and the lack of clarity around this would cause me to renew, if it's in order, Madam Chair, to strike line 3.18 out of the A6 amendment. And certainly it's something we can address at another time, but I don't think it's the real issue that you have worked so hard on, Senator Dahl, to get to today. And so with that, Madam Chair, I'd like to renew my motion.
Let's do that. Let's just vote on this because I think it's clear now, you know, how the work will be done. Okay. So quickly on that point, Senator Wicker.
Madam Chair, Sarah Nelson, what if we had it so it read all certified Minnesota teacher preparation programs? If the intent is to have information for those schools that prepare for licensure, which is 31 colleges, public and private, and not to address those religious schools or others that you're talking about that prepare for certification, we focus on the former, and so that it would read all certified Minnesota teacher.
Senator, I've been told by the staff that in order to do that, it has to be board approved,
right,
and not certified.
Right.
So
yes.
The motion will be to kind of do, I think, what the intent here was originally, but it's not clear that
okay?
This refers to board approved.
Is
that
Senator
Nelson?
Chair, Senator Wicker, that gets more to addressing my concern. But at this point, my motion to amend A6 to strike line 3.18 is on the table, I think. And, Madam Chair, I'd like to have a vote on that. And then, if need be, we can certainly address Senator Wicker's recommendation, which may be a better recommendation. And I would like to call for a roll call on that, please.
So the motion will be to... strike, delete public, and then we will move into a motion presented by Senator Wicker, which will insert in the same line board approved. So Senator Nelson will move to
delete line
to delete 318, and then we'll move to the next one. So on that motion, all of those in favor.
I call for a roll call, Madam Chair.
Roll call, Senator Clausen.
Senator Dahl, are you comfortable with that?
I'm going to vote no, and I'm going to vote for Senator Wicker's better language on that.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay, Senators. So on the motion to delete 318, the clerk will take the roll.
On the A6 amendment.
Mm-hmm. On the to the amendment. So this is, we are working on the amendment right now. So this is line 318 on the A6 amendment. to strike that language.
Senator Torres Ray.
Nope.
Senator Dahl.
No.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
No.
Senator Chamberlain.
Yes.
Senator Clausen.
No.
Senator Franzen. Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
No.
Senator Nino.
Yes. Yes.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Rood.
Yes.
Yes.
Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Wigger.
No.
Senator Wicklin.
No.
On the vote of 7-7, the motion is not adopted. Senator Wigger?
Yes. Madam Chair, with any additional comment from counsel, I would move at 5.14 between the words Minnesota and teacher, now that public is deleted, insert board approved.
Public has not been deleted, Senator. The motion did not pass.
Or that is, okay. That we have board approved.
It passed. Okay. So now I have to consult because we are going to have, you're going to have to change your motion in order to have the language that is correct. So you might have to just delete the word public and insert the word board approved.
Madam Chair, I got confused.
Yes, we're trying to fix it, Senator. I'll explain it.
The amendment that we just voted on was to delete in the amendment the line that would remove public. That tied 7-7, so that amendment failed. So that means that this amendment still stands and public is deleted.
Correct.
Okay, thank
Correct,
you.
Senator. Sorry, thank yes, you. I'm just talking about the amendment to the amendment. So we're continuing okay. with the language that is in the amendment.
And Madam Chair, I'm inserting board approved.
Senator, Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair, members.
I just want to do this correctly. The
amendment would read, well, first there's one technical thing. We did miss one reference to public online on page 5, line 9, so I'm going to have to add that in. But for this, for Senator Wigger's amendment, it would be page 5, lines 9, 11, 14, and 20, after Minnesota, insert board approved. So it would be in all the references to those programs and institutions.
Yep.
Okay, members, did you catch that? So we're adding board
adopted?
Approved.
Is the A6 adopted?
Madam
is
Chair.
Is the A6 still on the table?
To the amendment.
A6 is on the table. We're working on A6.
It has to be.
The motion is to the bill, not to the amendment.
Right.
Is adopted.
It's either, yeah, I'm not sure if he's amending that or.
Senator, Ms. Butler is going to do it on the amendment.
Madam Chair, members, what we can do is amend, then insert that on the A6 amendment, amend it page 3, line 18, page 3 after line 18, insert page 5, lines 9, 11, 14, and 20 after Minnesota, insert board approved.
She was fixing already the bill, but since we are on the amendment, yes. Then we'll later go into the bill. So let's fix the amendment first. Is that clear?
Yes. Senator Nelson. Just a comment. I would accept this as a solution to the concern that I expressed. I will just say the amount of discussion we've had here and the fact that we've been a little bit confused ourselves and we have the legal experts sitting at this table really gets to the point why I wish my First Amendment would have passed. Something like this really deserves a little bit broader discussion and a little bit more clarity. I think we've probably confused the public as well if they're watching today. But I do want to thank Senator Wigger for offering his amendment, which I do believe addresses my concern.
Thank you, Senator. And I think that the confusion lies in the fact that we have different ideas as to why we want to do this. And I welcome that. I don't think we're confused. I think we're disagreeing and we're trying to figure out how to do this in the best possible way to accommodate your disagreement with this policy, our support for this policy, and get to a place where we can do the best we can for teachers. So that's what it is.
Madam Chair?
So I'm going to take a final comment on this, and I'm going to move.
Madam Chair, I think you had an order of people you were
going to... I did. So Senator Thompson, Senator Peterson, and Senator Chamberlain, and I am going to stop there, and I'm going to continue because I do need to hear more bills, and we do need to hear to get to the omnibus policy bill. We've talked a lot about this. I think we can agree that we disagree on how to approach it, and we're trying to do our best to bring our disagreements forward and work with the task force. And it seems like more and more we just have to go work through task forces because we can't make decisions. Senator Thompson.
Madam Chair, I got a question for Ms. Ballmer and then also Ms. Butler, if Ms. Ballmer wouldn't mind coming back.
Ms. Ballmer.
Madam Chair.
Yes,
is that
Senator
to this
Ballmer.
Amendment?
We're on the amendment. We're on the amendment.
The amendment to the amendment.
We need to pass the amendment to the amendment. If this question is not on the amendment to the amendment.
I apologize. I forgot we had a pending amendment.
Yes.
It is not on that.
Okay.
I intended to go after my mistake, Madam Chair.
Okay, Senator. Thank you very much. So if you don't have any more questions on the amendment to the amendment, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. The amendment to the amendment is adopted. Now we go back to the amendment. Senator Thompson.
Thank you. I apologize. I just forgot we hadn't voted there. Now I'll ask if Ms. Ballmer would be kind enough to come back to the table. Is my understanding correct, Ms. Ballmer, that teacher candidates must attempt the basic skills test before they enter a college teaching program? So essentially, they've tried the test and they kind of know the contents of it before they even get into a teaching program?
Ms. Ballmer.
Madam Chair, Senator Thompson, that is correct. We have Board of Teaching rule that provides substantially more greater detail around the testing program and requirements beyond what's in the two places in statute that you're considering today. One of the provisions does require that teacher candidates, prior to beginning their teacher preparation course sequence, must attempt the basic skills. It's not a requirement to pass the basic skills at that point. So that applies to that one population. The population, you know, we've got a couple different populations of teachers, of course, that are impacted. People coming from out of state, you know, fall in a different category. But for those going through our pipeline here in Minnesota, that does apply.
And, Senator, if you recall, that was your proposal. The majority proposal decided that you should do this early because we had to take people out early if they were not fit to teach. So right. That was your proposal, actually.
Well, Madam Chair, my proposal was to actually have to pass it. I'm talking about just the argument has been made that teachers don't know what they're getting into. But the fact is they do before they get into the teaching program.
That's right.
All right. I then have a question for Ms. Butler. I want to make sure I understand this correctly. If you look at line 1.9 in the amendment.
We're in the amendment. Okay.
In the amendment. Okay. The board may issue a temporary one-year teaching license. Then if you combine that with over on the bill on lines 211 to 219, there are some requirements that a teacher must meet in order to teach without having passed the skills test. Since there is no limitation in the amendment to the number of times that a temporary one-year license could be issued, if I understand the amendment combined with the bill, in theory, a teacher could teach a full career without ever passing the skills test under this bill as amended. Am I correct?
Senator, Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, there is no limit on the number of one-year temporary teaching licenses.
So, Madam Chair,
Senator Thompson,
the committee needs to know this does not reinstitute the requirement to pass the exam. We took the words out, but the fact is there could still be an infinite number of one-year licenses issued for a teacher who doesn't pass the basic skills test. So this bill, as amended, removes the requirement that a teacher pass the basic skills test. And in light of that, I would propose an oral amendment. And members and staff, I'm looking at the amendment to the bill, so I'm looking at the A6 amendment. At line 1.9, it says that the board may issue a temporary one-year license. I would like to change the word A to to 1. So line 1.9 would now read that the board may issue 1 temporary 1-year teaching license. I move that amendment and I ask for roll call.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, I believe that they currently can get a 3-year.
That's right.
At this for content and pedagogy. I'm sorry. I'm going to oppose this. Again, the Board of Teaching still has the power to deny that 1-year teaching license. As we look at the bill, it's up to the school to determine whether they want to keep someone who doesn't pass a basic skills test. So I'm going to oppose that.
On that, Senator Thompson and then Senator Clausen.
Madam Chair, we can get this verified. My understanding is that the 3-year was actually repealed in a bill signed by the governor last session. Maybe you're wrong on that. The point that I'm making, folks, is Senator Dahl, I understand you oppose this. So what you are advocating is the ability of a teacher to teach a full career without passing the basic skills exam. It does the exact same thing in a slightly different way as the bill that we rejected 4-10 yesterday.
Madam Chair.
Senator Dahl.
That's not what I'm advocating. I'm advocating that we help those teachers that currently are having difficulties, especially in light of the fact that we know that there are serious problems with the test, which we've gone over ad nauseum. And until that is fixed, I think that this is the right fix until we know that the test that we're giving ensures that we have the best teachers in front of the classroom and not their ability to take a test.
Senator Clausen.
Yes. On the A6 Amendment 3.19, we also talk about an appeals process. There are certain people that have perhaps learning disabilities, test anxiety, what have you, and that appeals process might just take more than within the timeline that Senator Thompson is proposing.
Okay. Members, we have an amendment to the amendment that I would like to move. Senator Peterson, quickly, if you could.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
On the amendment, there is an amendment
to
the
amendment.
Amendment.
It's to the amendment to the amendment, and it's pertinent to that. Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, if that isn't what you're advocating, and I don't really think it is, what – how many then? Would no more than 2, no more than 3? I think if you're saying that's not what you're advocating, you should put forward something that you do think is appropriate. You referenced the 3-year window that used to be in statute. Would no more than 3 be a legitimate, reasonable compromise, if you will?
Senator Dahl?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure how that affects those people that are currently having difficulty with learning disabilities. Again, I want to make sure that we're accommodating those. I also want to see the work of the task force, but I think I'm with you. I just don't want to close a window for the person that is at the end of their rope right now. So.
This would open a window.
Actually, Senators, we've gone through this. It has been 3 years. We change it. So we need to solve it. I mean, seriously, this is – so in 3 years we have to come back? No, we have to make a decision. And this is a tough decision. I understand, and we are in disagreements. We're in disagreement. That's okay. That's okay. That's what we do. So let's hear this. I think that we need to solve it, unless, Senator, you have a preference for moving – you know, back to the 3, if you feel that helps, can do a friendly amendment to the author's amendment. But let's don't get back into why we disagree. And we already know that. This is our third time talking about why we agree or disagree on this. So let's just offer solutions and let's move on. So Senator Thompson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I do want to get this done in a way that's acceptable to everybody. And Senator Dahl did make reference to the 3 years. I think that allowing an individual 3 years to make whatever accommodations are necessary to pass the skills test is a very reasonable period of time. Therefore, Madam Chair, I would withdraw my pending amendment, and I would offer an amendment that in line 1.9 of the A6 amendment, the word A before temporary be changed to 3. So line 1.9 would now read that the board may issue 3 temporary one-year teaching license. And hopefully that would be a compromise that those of you who are very, very concerned about the inequities in the test, this would give a teacher 3 years to fix it. People like me who believe strongly that this test should be something people would have to pass know that if a teacher can't get it done in 3 years, that because there's been a lot of reference to protecting the teachers, and we all want to do that. But the end user of education is the student, not the teacher, not the legislature, not the school board, not the principal. And to me, this is a reasonable way to take care of students.
Okay,
I would urge your vote yes, and I would request a roll call.
Let's just, I think everybody understands what this is. Everybody understands this has been in the books. They understand, the proposal that Senator Dahl is bringing, the intentions of the members here, the intention of Senator Thompson. So, Senator Dahl, one final comment, and let's vote on this.
I have a question.
Madam Chair, again, I'm worried about the one teacher that was spoke here before from Pillager, and I know that he's already had 3 tests. He may be done. I don't know. He may be done. I mean that, and so I do want to accommodate, but I'm going to vote no myself.
Okay. Please, if you are offering something new, please let us know. A brief opinion will be appreciated, Senator Nino, Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And before my comment, a technical suggestion. I think the word license, you may want to incorporate that to make that a plural, 3 licenses, plural. Offer that up as a technical suggestion. But, Madam Chair, I think...
I oppose. No.
Madam Chair, without belaboring the point, I think what we see here is my perceived intent of the author is to eliminate the requirement to pass the test. We offered 1 year. That maybe would have been a little stringent. We offered 3 years, which seems eminently reasonable. The author doesn't like that because there are people that might not pass the test then. And the choice is clear. Do we want teachers to pass the test before they get their license? Do we want to allow some flexibility in that? Certainly. But do we want them to have to pass the test before a license is given to them or not? That is the decision before us. And I think it's better that we have them pass the test. There may be those that disagree, and that's fine. But that is, let's be clear, that is the question.
Senator Nino, I do want to, and this is for all of you members, we have been questioning each other's, reasons for why we're pursuing this. I think that the author has said, I don't know how many times, I want to solve the problems for these teachers that are out there, who are teaching, who are exceptional, who have dedicated years of their lives to educating themselves and who care very deeply about our kids. I think he has said that so many times, and I want to bring a solution. He brought a solution that you don't agree with. That's fine. We're trying to find common ground here, but if we won't, we just have to move on and just vote. So I'm going to take Senator Kent's comments, and then I have to move. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm trying to make sure I'm keeping up with where we are and clarify what this amendment would leave. So we would have 3 1-year temporary licenses and an appeals process. Is that correct? And then within this, we have the opportunity, because my concern is, as I think been very articulately explained by many people, that there are inherent problems with the initial test process that we created. And that if these problems are never going to work for certain people because of certain issues in the areas they're teaching or in their own abilities, that just continuing to keep doing the same thing over and over again is not going to improve the situation. My concern is that we are making meaningful improvements to the test itself that will not unfairly target people who would otherwise be very qualified teachers, right? Because I agree. I think the focus needs to be on making sure that we're educating our students. But we also, in the process, can't unfairly leave out very effective teachers. So my question is, Senator Dahl, staff, somebody, am I understanding this right, that where we would be leaving this with this amendment would be three temporary one-year licenses plus an appeals process, and at the same time we're trying to make meaningful fixes to the test process itself?
Madam Chair,
Senator,
I think I'd probably agree with the 3 year or even less if that came after the task force recommendations.
Senator Clausen.
Yes. Yesterday, I made the statement, I can live with a time period, except with a math issue. You know, we're talking about giving a person a college-level math test who's going to be a kindergarten teacher who may have not taken a math class since their senior year in high school. It's ludicrous. And I asked the question, how many of you have used algebra in the last 6 months as a senator or in your private life as your work? And that's one that I just can't live with. It's ridiculous. I can see basic skills in reading and writing, but the math is the poor gentleman from Pillager who's an art teacher can't pass the math exam. Well, there's reasons for it.
Okay,
it's not pertinent to his teaching.
Thank you, Senator. I think we need to vote on this. I think that we are clear on what we're trying to do here. However, staff has given me a warning on actually the placement of that recommendation because it will not fit in there. So we'll have to go back to the actual bill where this language is located. So we could, you know, park it and then move through the amendment and go back into where the language actually belongs, Senator Thompson. The staff is telling me that actually if we put that language here, it just doesn't fit. So,
Madam Chair, I would certainly rely upon staff to make the proper correction to execute my intent. That would be fine.
So keep that in mind that we will come back to it because we need to actually incorporate that in the right place, and this will not be the right place. So I am going to take a vote on this.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
Senator Thompson didn't withdraw his amendment.
No, that's right.
I think my understanding of what I heard Senator Thompson say is that he would like to offer an amendment to the amendment with the language that staff is indicating that needs to be engrossed into the bill.
Okay, Senator Nino, what is happening, though, is that I need to finish the A6 amendment. I need to complete the discussion, the debate on the A6 amendment in order to move out of the 6th Amendment and go back into the bill and place your recommendation in the right place. So this is just mechanics. I cannot get out of the A6 Amendment and actually incorporate your language where it belongs, correct? Or you tell me if there is another venue. That's what you just told me. So go ahead, Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair, I guess you could phrase it as an amendment to the amendment, citing the pages and lines in the just in the actual bill that Senator Thompson wants to amend. It might get a little confusing because it's in two spots and so different pages, but
you have to mention it. So could you do you feel comfortable if she actually mentions the parts in which your amendment needs to go?
Yeah, my understanding, Madam Chair and Ms. Butler, tell me if I'm wrong, is you called to my attention, and I appreciate that, an area of the actual bill that would need to be changed. But I also believe that for completeness and clarity, my change to the amendment would also need to be made to clarify. Because if you look at line 1.9 of the amendment right now, it doesn't restrict the number of temporary one-year licenses that could be issued. So I think I didn't understand your conversation with me to mean it's an either or, but I understood that not only would my change need to be made in the amendment, but there would need to be some corrective language in the bill. Am I missing it?
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, on the A6 amendment, a teacher is just getting one temporary license, not getting three temporary licenses. I thought the issue you're trying to address is how many times they get a one-year license, which is the renewal part that
it is,
that's
but
in the actual bill. That's just getting one time on the line 1.9.
But it seems to me that looking at that language in a vacuum, you could theoretically issue as many one-year licenses as you wanted. So it needs to be limited to 3 1-year licenses. No?
Ms. Blackman.
I guess, Madam Chair, and Senator Thompson, I don't think so. The way I read it, you get the one that expires after 1 year, but the times how many the because it's actually talking about renewing it later. So that's how you would get another one.
Okay, and where in the bill would you make the correction, Ms. Butler? Would you help?
Sure.
Maybe that'll clarify it for me.
Okay, Madam Chair and Senator Thompson and members, it's on page 2. It's at starting on line 11 is the starting of the list of what you need to do for the renewal process. So, but the language that I think Senator Thompson would need to insert is on 2.13, where it says the board renews the temporary 1-year license, and I would suggest inserting after the word license no more than 3 times. And then it would they still have to meet the criteria that's listed of in clauses 1, 2, and 3, and to go on, Senator Thompson, a similar insertion would need to be made on page 4 because that's where we address applicants that have been licensed in other states. We also offer them the opportunity to get a temporary license, and so on page 4, line 21, there would have to be, again, the limit. I just forgot where I was going to put it, though. After license, I think it would be no more than 3 times if the and go on with the requirement.
All right. Madam Chair and Ms. Butler,
Senator Thompson.
So then in your mind, if those 2 changes were made, we would not need to change the language in the amendment in order to restrict it to 3 renewals.
Ms. Butler.
Madam Chair and Senator Thompson, that's correct. That's my understanding.
All right. Well, then, in light of that, Madam Chair, I will withdraw my current amendment, but then I would ask the indulgence of the Chair to have Ms. Butler, once we've adopted the amendment, explain the changes that need to be made to the original Senate file 1224 so that I can make that amendment. Is it, if the
correct.
Chair, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Senator.
With that, I withdraw my proposed amendment.
Senator Dahl, well, so let's move on the A6 amendment. Any other comments? If not, Senator Dahl moves to move the A6 amendment. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. So let's go back to Senator Thompson's motion to amend the bill and to incorporate the language for the 3-year. Ms. Butler, please say where.
Sure. Madam Chair, members, and then I guess the number, whether you want 3 or 2, because 2 renewals end up being 3 years. So that's what I just want to make sure which
Madam
way
Chair,
you want.
Madam Chair, Ms. Butler, yes, two renewals.
Okay.
Yes, 3 years total.
Okay.
That was the intent from the outset.
Sure. Then to the amendment would be, Madam Chair and members, page 2, line 13, after license, insert no more than 2 times. And then page 4, line 21, after license, insert no more than 2 times.
Are people clear on that, Senator Nino?
Thank you, Madam.
On that amendment.
Yeah, a question for Senator Dahl. Senator Dahl, I'm assuming you're still opposing this version of the amendment?
Well, again, Madam Chair, Senator Nino, I'm worried about those persons that are currently have already taken the test 3 times, whether this language affects them. I'm trying to, you know, correct a problem that we have, but I want to give them that chance. If it's going forward from now and it's 2 times, I could live with it.
Well, let's make that
so, again, going back to, you know, I'm not trying to do this in perpetuity. I'm trying to fix those people that have been harmed by the current test, and I want to make sure that they can continue to teach with this particular language. That is the only reason I would face it. That's why I offered possibly, you know, that 2 limit takes place after the task force recommendations.
And I do appreciate that, Senator, because, Senators, this does not resolve the problem for the people who have come to us to ask for a solution. they are out. They will not be working because they've done this. So if there is anything you can offer to resolve that, which is what the author has been trying to resolve. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, so if Senator Thompson were to withdraw and reoffer this amendment with a provision that it's effective after February 1st, 2014, which is when the task force must submit recommendations, would you be supportive?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to have that amendment.
Senator Thompson, would
Madam
you
Chair,
be willing to?
Members, I'm agreeable to that, yes.
Thank you very much. Oops. Thank you, thank you. We have a lot of people who really want us to resolve this, and I hope the task force, you know, comes with some good recommendations. Okay, on Senator Thompson's motion, Senator Carlson.
I just need to have some clarification on line 217 of the bill. It talks about attempting to pass the exam during the one-year licensure period. Does this mean that the person needs to is mandated to take the test each year, to retake the test each year of the temporary license?
Senator, I believe that they will have to keep trying because they do eventually have to pass in order to stay. So,
Madam Chair, I think the renewal is contingent upon them attempting the test again.
Okay. Good.
Thank you. Members, are you clear on what we're trying to do here? Do you want the staff to review that one more time? So we are going to put the motion for the two, which is 3 years, but it's two at two renewals as of 2014.
Yeah. Madam Chair, request a roll call.
Okay, on that motion, roll call has been requested, and the clerk will take the roll.
2014.
Senator Johnson.
Does that include the language that you agreed to with Senator Dahl about after the task?
That is my intent, Madam Chair. Did I not procedurally get that taken care of? I meant to add the language to alleviate Senator Dahl's concern that it would be effective, what was it, January?
January 14th.
February 1, 2014.
Correct.
Senator. Madam Chair, and again, I'm amenable to that. I don't know if we properly voted on it.
No, we
haven't.
We haven't. We had a question. So it's clear to the staff. I want to make sure that that language is properly.
I understand. I have to figure out how to do it.
You'll do it.
Thank you. We rely on you. On that motion, Brett, please take the roll.
Senator Torres Ray.
Yes.
Senator Dahl.
Yes.
Senator Nelson.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Chamberlain. Senator Clausen.
Yes.
Senator Franzen. Senator Johnson.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Nino.
Yes.
Senator Peterson.
Yes.
Senator Rood. Senator Thompson.
Yes.
Senator Wieger.
Yes.
Senator Wicklund.
Yes.
Thank you. On a unanimous vote, the bill passes. And thank you, Senator, for accommodating.
No, the amendment.
That was the amendment. We passed the amendment. This is the final amendment. Correct. Sorry. To the Senator Thompson's amendment to the bill. It passes. Thank you.
Now the bill.
Now to the bill. So, Senator, could you please move a motion to move your bill?
Madam Chair, I'll move Senate File 1224 as amended.
Thank you, Senator. And this will be going to finance. Now,
recommended to pass.
I do have Senator Hayden patiently waiting. So I am going to take very brief comments, members. I think we've said enough about this bill. This is the third attempt. We've come to consensus on something that was very difficult. I appreciate Senator Thompson, Senator Nino, everyone, Senator Dahl, for your patience. So Senator Peterson briefly, Senator Nino, and Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Dahl, actually, Madam Chair and Senator Dahl, I have an oral amendment that I'd like to offer that is in line with the language that was accepted in the House committee. There is an additional mandate in this bill that districts must provide similar appropriate timely remedial assistance on line 1.22. I'd just like to change the must to a may. That would be my motion.
Senator Dahl.
Madam Chair, we already did that yesterday's amendment, and we made that reference before you came in the room today.
You did. So, okay, perfect. You. Wonderful.
So that's been taken care of. Senator Nino.
Thank you, Madam Chair. No comments on the bill. Just a question. If we create a task force in here, does this need to go state and local government?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
I was just corrected on that, Senator. Thank you. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to say thank you for your patience, because this was a difficult bill, and I want to thank Senator Claussen, Senator Dahl, for, and all of us at this table for making it a better bill and making it work. And so while democracy can be messy and time-consuming, I think today, Madam Chair, through your patience and the will of this committee, we have shown that we can do this. And so I just want to thank you, even though I'm still hoping that on Friday I'll get to bring my three bills before this committee. I promise they will not be this long. I expect them all to be unanimously passed. But thank you for your patience, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Senator. And thank you all for really spending so much time on this and trying to move something on behalf of teachers who really need our help. Senator Dahl, thank you, and please renew your motion.
Madam Chair, and thank you to the committee, too. And I'm excited to make a phone call to Kayla Vandenhoosel this afternoon, that her dream of becoming a teacher lives on. And again, I thank all of you for your indulgence and again, a messy few days on this particular topic, but I appreciate it. I'd like to renew my motion to move Senate File 1224 as amended and referred to state and local government.
Thank you. On that motion, all of those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no.
No.
Motion is adopted. Thank you, Senator. Senator Hayden.
We did fix this bill.
Thank you for your patience.
We amended it.
I know we have pulled you out of conference committee about.
No, that's okay.
Our apologies, but hopefully we can move your bill.
Madam Chair, thank you. No, that's okay. I know you guys have very hard work to do in this committee.
And, Senator, if you don't mind, since we're going to session, unless I hear that there is some, clarification or opposition to your proposal, I will entertain only two of your testifiers.
Great. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Senate File 952 is a proposal that was brought to me by the Minneapolis Urban League. It's reference to a proposal called the 13th grade. I won't go into a lot of comments, but basically we know that we have an achievement gap, and we are working awfully hard to solve the achievement gap. But unfortunately, Madam Chair, there are a lot of children that are caught in the achievement gap and are now leaving our system not prepared for post-secondary options. The 13th grade essentially is an opportunity for those young people to take an extra grade to get additional help, as well as to do some assessments to figure out where they might want to go, where their skills might best lend them. And I will let Mr. Gray, the president CEO of the Urban League, talk more about it, as well as Mr. Simmons, who's the principal of one of our contract alternative schools that the Urban League runs. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, and welcome both. We appreciate that you're here presenting innovative ideas as to how we can deal with the achievement gap. So, Mr. Gray, or who would like to go? Yes.
Yes, I'll begin. Thank you for having us, Madam Chair. Thank you, committee members. I want to also thank Senator Hayden and Senator Champion for being the sponsors of this bill. They know that this is important. Action that we need to step forward with in this community. We have 18 to 25-year-olds in this community that are graduating from high school, that are getting their GED but not quite ready to go to work or into post-secondary opportunities. We're finding
Mr. Gray, excuse me, before you continue, please say your name and the agency you represent. We have a tape.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. Scott Gray, President and Chief Executive Officer of the Minneapolis Urban League.
Thank you.
So as I was saying, the Education Alliance is saying that we're spending about $3.7 billion annually on students that are not ready to go to post-secondary or career ladder opportunities. And so we need to really focus on closing the gap as it relates to spending that type of money. No budget can sustain that. And then we also need to take a look at a Georgetown study that says that 70% of our jobs by 2018 will require a post-secondary degree of some sort. And so if we don't get on this now, right now, then we're going to have some challenges that will plague this community and will continue to block individuals that may be value added to this community. And we know at the Urban League that they can be value added, but we need to put them into an opportunity that gives them a 3 to 6 month to 12 month opportunity to regain some skills, to really break down some barriers or some challenges that they have, and really prepare them, get them career oriented, and really prepare them for an opportunity that could move forward through one of the Urban League's pathways. You know, as we have a partnership with the building and trades industry, we place about 60 folks into apprentice opportunities each year in construction, you know, going into a trade, making on average about $19 per hour. We can create other customized opportunities. We have had employers approach us and say, can you do similar models that put a wraparound service and get folks really career focused on this particular industry, because we know if they're focused on it, then we won't lose them. And then the second pathway could be a partnership that we already have with MCTC or Dunwoody and others. If they don't go to our customized opportunities that we have with employers, they can transition to opportunities at Dunwoody MCTC. We know when we look at their retention rates, they are quite low for people of color in this community. They are, in a lot of cases, appalling. And we need to figure out how do we get more folks prepared and ready so that they don't drop out that first mark period, lose their financial aid, and then get into a situation where they can't go back to school because their financial aid is in default. And so we have a couple of folks testifying here today. I know Senator Hayden has a busy schedule.
And we're going to go to session in 5 minutes.
Okay. So Senator Hayden, how would you like us to?
Good. Well, Madam Chair, if I could just give brief comments, and then we can move towards any questions that went out through the bill. Just give your name.
Mr. Simmons, if you would like to provide some brief testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Ron Simmons. I'm principal of Minneapolis Urban League Academy. I want to thank Madam Chair and the committee members. I would like to give you a brief snapshot of the Minneapolis Urban League and probably some of the other schools that may be similar in support of the 13th grade. The Minneapolis Urban League is often the last refuge of students struggling in a traditional public school setting. Our students come to us struggling academically and socially, lacking the skill level proficiency needed to graduate, enrolled in college, or even lead a successful life. We currently have 132 students enrolled, and 25 of those students are middle school students. The majority of our student population is African American. From 3 to 13% of our kids are homeless, and otherwise they come from an unstable environment. They come to us 3 or 4 grades below grade level, sometimes 5 grades below grade level with some of our seniors. They have been shuffled between 2 and 3 and 4 schools, struggling with behavior and have fallen academically. Our students need the extra year in school to develop a proficient level of vocational, college readiness, job, and career success.
That's great.
Good. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator. And I so appreciate what the Urban League and all of the programs that work in partnership with the Urban League are doing for our kids. We just heard some very important testimony, Senator, early. And in that testimony about homeless kids, we heard that there are almost 6,000 youth
that are identified to be homeless, and 72% of these children are African American. And every time we review the statistics about child poverty, achievement gap, we clearly see that we need to do more for our African American children. And I know that the Urban League and your staff and your partners are doing significant work, and we're very proud that you are taking on these responsibilities. We know that it's a significant challenge. So thank you, Senator Hayden, for bringing this to our attention and for being creative. We need more ideas like this, Senator, because we just this is a crisis. It's just so urgent that we bring our partners, and I appreciate that you are bringing important partners to the table. So thank you, Senator. Yeah. Senator Nelson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Hayden, I thank you for bringing this proposal. I think it looks like a great idea, and you're addressing a real need. I have one thought, and that is you're limiting the pilot sites to a cohort of at least 100 young adults per site. And my thought would be, I'd like to know what you think about this. Perhaps maybe that might be a little bit severely limiting the pilot sites. And would you be comfortable with maybe changing that to 50 young adults? I'm thinking there are other areas in the state which certainly could benefit, and you might want a pilot site beyond just a Minneapolis or St. Paul. You might want pilot programs in other parts of the state. And so I'm wondering how you would feel about changing line 1.20, changing that amount to maybe 50 students per site. I'd like to see this pilot site project in other places as well, because I think it could be very meaningful, and it could really help close that achievement gap. Yeah.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Nelson, I would be more than happy to amend that. You know, when we put this together, we're just using generalities. But if there is interest in other parts of the state, I think we're more than happy to do it, and I would accept that. Or I would accept that as a very friendly amendment.
Madam Chair, I'd like to offer that amendment, please.
So Senator Nelson offers an amendment to change 100 in one line 20 to 50. All of those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed say no. The amendment is adopted. Senator Johnson, would you like to move the bill?
I have a question.
Thank you. Senator Johnson.
Madam Chair and Senator Hayden, there's going to be more than one site. You're anticipating more than one site, correct? But you have named one.
Right. Madam Chair and Senator Johnson, yeah, the Minneapolis Urban League brought this together, so we've put them in the bill because they had the great idea. We do anticipate more, and we hope that there's more. I have not personally identified more organizations yet, but because they brought this forward, that's the group that we named in the bill. But we would be more than willing to amend the bill or to put the bill in the shape that allows more participants, obviously.
Thank you, Senator. Senator Clausen.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. I apologize. I had to step out for a moment, but you may have covered this. But as part of the program, is a mentoring, internship, apprenticeship at all part of it?
Absolutely.
Could you comment, please?
Mr. Gray.
Madam Chair.
Senator Clausen.
Senator Clausen, thank you for asking the question. Yes, we presented it as a pathway. So after they do their 3 to 12 months with us, they would be transitioned to an apprenticeship pathway or into a partnership with MCTC or Dunwoody for continuing education.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any more questions? So Senator Johnson moved that we move Senate File 952. We'd recommend it to pass and be re-referred to Finance. All of those in favor of that motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say no. The motion is adopted. Thank you,
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Thank you.
Members, we need to review our omnibus bill, but obviously we have to go to session. And I believe that we are scheduled to come back at 5:30 to 3:18. So we adjourn, we recess until 5:30, room 3:18.